Plenty to discuss with our commentators this week, Neil Jones and Ben Thomas. Kia ora kōrua.
Morena.
Tempted to go straight to the budget, but actually it was so fascinating, that Australian election result. I'm really interested just to kick off there in the first instance. So there's some lessons to be learned, particularly for incumbent governments who've been handling the pandemic response, and now soaring inflation after this long period of monetary stimulus. Is there a lesson here that needs to be taken on board by the next people to be going to elections, or indeed those going to elections next year, Ben?
Very broadly, I think you could say that a good COVID response is not a shield to losing an election, particularly if that response sort of falters in the face of, you know, the, as far as we can tell, unstoppable Omicron variant. Australia actually had a very good COVID response. And, you know, Scott Morrison obviously couldn't rest on those laurels. There are differences, you know, there are significant differences. It would be easy to say, well, it's a bad time for incumbents, you know, with inflation globally. Australia, you know, buffeted a little bit. Their inflation took a little while to kind of really get going, still not at New Zealand levels. They have, as a result, and as, you know, as the result of their own internal policies, their Reserve Bank only started raising interest rates about a couple of weeks ago by a very small amount. So they weren't hit by the same sort of level of, you know, kind of cost of living crisis that I think is the New Zealand government has to grapple with. So probably a small comfort for the New Zealand government there.
And Neil, your take?
Yeah, look, I mean, as Ben said, inflation is a global issue and incumbents around the world are struggling. As much as we're told Graham Robertson is personally responsible for inflation, this is hitting incumbents all over the world. And so I think that's a message for Labor, obviously, that that will continue to be an issue right up to the election. I think you've got to be careful, but, you know, in terms of what you can draw from it, some of it's not relevant. I mean, Scott Morrison's character became a major issue in the final stages of the campaign. He had to kind of admit that he had maybe got things wrong and would change. That's never a good sign when you're doing that a week out from an election. But I think one thing that might be relevant is the sort of the green wave we saw, well, the teal wave. So depending on how the numbers fall, there could be as many as 9 teal independents, which are basically former Liberal people who have decided that their party isn't serious on climate change, stood against it, and basically dethroned them in a bunch of seats. Plus, you saw the Greens pick up Brisbane, which was quite remarkable. So I think there was a lesson there for centre-right parties just to take climate change seriously, because as much as there is a temptation sometimes to play the politics of cost of living and isn't it all so hard to deal with climate change, wouldn't it be easier if we did nothing, I think actually there are key voters in the suburbs, swing voters, middle class, who actually want to see action. And I think Scott Morrison got that one wrong, and that's part of the reason why he's now not Prime Minister.
I think that's fascinating, because when, you know, the issues polling that the ABC was playing on Saturday night showed that climate change was the top issue in a number of states, you know, by quite some margin, 27%, I think, in Western Australia. Now, that, you know, what we know of the issues polling that's been done in New Zealand is that it's nowhere near there. You know, it doesn't even make it into the top three issues in that latest Taxpayer Union Courier poll, which was published, where I think, you know, cost of living was about 25%, the economy was about 15%, COVID was 3.5%, and that sort of rounded out the top three voter concerns. And in New Zealand, I think that probably reflects, you know, going back to as far as 2008, when both John Key and Helen Clark campaigned quite strongly on emissions reduction. So the perceived gap between, you know, the Conservative Party, say the centre-right party, and the centre-left party in terms of the major parties, they're not seen as sort of markedly different. Whereas in Australia, I think, you know, the Liberal Nationals really are sort of stuck in this, well, if climate change is real kind of mode. So again, not sure that we can take the same kind of, you know, any kind of lesson from that in the New Zealand context. But, you know, I mean, just interestingly enough, you know, with the emissions reduction plan, which of course was announced ahead of the budget, you know, we're getting to the pointy end of climate change policy. I remember back in 2008 when the sort of major parties both agreed to sort of make it a major issue and sort of, you know, reach at least rhetorical agreement on it. John Key was campaigning for halving emissions by 2030. Helen Clark was campaigning on a carbon neutral New Zealand by 2050. Now, if you fell into a coma during the leaders debate that year, and then you woke up now in 2022, you'd say, well, we must be pretty far down the road to getting to either half or zero carbon emissions. But in fact, it's actually just grown every year since then. And that's why we're getting to this really hard end. It's kind of getting to the month before summer and your sort of 6 month plan for a bikini bod, you know, now has to sort of hit the road.
Yeah, there's a big difference perhaps in the stance of the two Conservative parties, National versus the Liberals specifically, and the Coalition. Obviously, that's another complexity with the Nationals in there as well. So there's a difference, I guess, in their respective stances. But for me, I'm really interested in the strength of the move against the Coalition and just, yeah, the strength of the move in the whole landscape, really.
I guess if I could just pop in there to respond briefly to Ben. I think that we can't underestimate how much climate change will increasingly be sort of the primary issue, and it will come to dominate, I think, in many ways, our economic discussions. So, yes, the current poll in New Zealand shows it as a relatively low priority issue, but I think there is a reasonable expectation among voters, including those Nationalists to win, that they will have a credible plan on it. And we'll get on to talk about the ERP, but I just don't think we actually have a credible plan from National yet. We have a rhetorical agreement in principle, but there's nothing underneath it. And I think that's where it could get tricky.
Okay, let's look at the budget then, and a lot of talk about how quickly that cost of living package got pulled together. Hard to argue about that. But the question is whether it was something of a balm on the rising tide of angst and pain around cost of living, Ben.
Yeah, that's right. This was a real Grant Robertson special. This is the sort of heady days of 2005 again, when as an advisor to Helen Clark, he sort of pulled that interest-free student loans policy out of the bag during a very close election. Obviously, you know, you wouldn't say knee-jerk, but you would say certainly very targeted at those voters who, you know, would have been majority probably Labour voters, just like most people were at the last election, but who might have been, you know, feeling sort of squeezed by cost of living and thinking, well, you know, what have I gotten out of this? You know, pretty cynical politics, I think. You know, a very obviously political move. The question, I guess, is just whether it's enough. You know, it works out as about three payments of what, $109 or $17 or something monthly. You know, which, you know, that's one big shop. It might fill up some of your tank. They certainly went for the right target. You know, went for the right target politically. Will that be enough? You know, certainly, you know, by the time the next election rolls around, that'll be long forgotten. And I don't think there'll be enough fond memories of, you know, buying some scorched almonds or whatever with your extra $300 to sort of carry them to victory in 2023.
Enough, though, to buy him some time for a few months and perhaps just switch the discussion a little bit from cost of living crisis and what's causing it and inflation and what's causing it to government trying to do something when it's arguing it's temporary. Hard to argue it's temporary now when it's still 5% next year.
Yeah, and that is the challenge Robertson will face. I think politically cost of living is very hard for any government because the reality is you can't really sustainably subsidise everyone's cost of living to, you know, to 7% a year. And even looking at this package, which was, you know, the cost of living payment and the fuel and the transport, public transport subsidies, that comes with a $1 billion price tag. And so if you were to do that right up to the election, you are looking at billions and billions and billions of dollars. So I think what he was very careful in his messaging to do was to say this is a contribution, to recognise it, and ultimately he'll be hoping that wage increases keep rising, inflation keeps coming down, and that starts to take the edge off. Interestingly, Robertson didn't rule out extending this further. He referred to COVID and said that one of the lessons from that is you need to be flexible and nimble. So we may well see an extension, but I mean, again, it's not easy. I think in terms of the budget more broadly, I think he got the balance about right. It was a very difficult environment in which to set a budget, as well as that short-term challenge of cost of living. There were some really big long-term challenges like health and climate change that kind of had to be addressed. And I think the other thing that he had to address was make sure that whatever he did on cost of living didn't exacerbate inflation. And that's one of the things that Treasury noted, was that although they were sort of critical of the payment, they did note that being time-bound and targeted was better than, say, being untargeted and not time-bound, which is what National's tax cuts would do. So it was a pretty finely calibrated budget. I think it was actually pretty orthodox. If you look at the numbers rather than the political rhetoric, Robertson's actually reducing the percentage of GDP the government spending takes up. So government spending is going down in percentage terms.
It's going down after a huge rise.
I want to be very clear here. I actually think it's very important to be clear here, because there's a lot of rhetoric and it's absolute economically literate nonsense. The reality is government spending now is about 31% of GDP. The historical long-term average of the last 25 years is about this. It's tracking down to about 30. So in real terms, government spending is entirely within the orthodox range and is actually coming down. So this is not the big blowout that National's presenting it as, or the X presenting it as. That's just nonsense. And I think people should not look, rather than looking at the he said, she said reports in the media, read what the bank economists are saying, because they don't lie. Stuff up.
It's true. However, we are also reading in the media, whether you like it or not, some pretty stark figures, and that is what National is going to hammer. I'm reading Paula Bennett at the weekend, the government's overspending to the detriment of future generations. And those headline numbers, and they are what people read, Neil, are quite sharp, to put it
mildly. Bear in mind, once you increase these baselines, you've locked that in, and once with inflation tracking as it is, Treasury said, in order to sort of just stay where you are, you'll have to spend over $3 billion next year, which is about more than two thirds of the operating allowance the government has allowed itself, just to keep up with inflation that is lower than it is currently. So the issue with this increased spending is it doesn't go down, right?
But it is going down. As a percentage of GDP, it is going down. I mean, the economy grows, right? That is a fact. And government spending grows.
1.7% next year is the estimate. Yep.
But the economy has grown. When you hear Luxon say things like 67% increase in government spending, that reflects largely that the economy has grown significantly in the last 5 years. And if, again, I go back to the facts, which is government spending as a percentage of GDP, around 31%, entirely in line with the last 25 years, actually reducing and projected to continue reducing to 30. So
your problem, Neil, is like that's one side of the argument, is whether government spending is out of control, and you're making a good pushback case on why in the context in particular. You could argue that it's not. But what people will feel, and that word is so important in politics, what people will feel is the immediate impact of inflation. And again, this is where National has successfully built a narrative. Now, the question is how you fight back against that, and who wins the argument over that, because that impact is real.
I think what Labour has to do is draw National out on what its actual plans are. So it's very easy to sort of demand tax cuts and not say how you'll pay for them, to complain about inflation but not actually say how you reduce it, to complain about debt but not say you'll reduce it, to criticise spending but not say what you'll cut. And this is National's current plan. They're kind of the backseat driver saying turn left, turn right, and don't go anywhere. I think the reason this is incoherent is because their plan doesn't add up, and budgets are about trade-offs. And I think Labour has to try and get National to actually front up about what their plan is, because I think if you look at it, if you're looking at those tax cuts, you're looking at what they want to do on debt, the only way you make that add up is billions of reduced spending in health, education, housing, okay, welfare. And I think that's where Labor, yep, has to actually make that real.
Because when we get to the heat of an election campaign, this is where these debates will happen under the glow of camera lights on social media, wherever else these debates happen. And does National need a more cohesive story, at least by then?
Absolutely, yeah. Look, going into the election camp, right now they can sort of say, well, they can point to one or two things and say, this is wasteful spending, we'll go line by line, we'll, you know, make the savings that we can. And look, that's perfectly legitimate position. You know, you can't expect an opposition leader's office with maybe sort of 10 staff to be able to replicate the public services budget process.
Well, the ACT party has.
Well, the ACT has gone through the government books and just drawn lines through the things that it doesn't like, which again is, you know, totally legitimate way of looking at things. And I actually think, you know, there is something very respectable about ACT's alternative budget, in the sense that they do make a very clear recognition that if you want to reduce government spending, you actually have to cut things. And I think I wrote about this the week before last, that, you know, there are a lot of things in government that, you know, you can sort of turn back on the opposition and say they want to cut this good thing, you know, the Human Rights Commission. We all love human rights. But then you actually look at what Paul Hunt and the Human Rights Commission do on a day-to-day basis, and you wonder whether it's worth tens of millions of dollars. And you can go through, you know, a number of things like that, you know, and this government isn't, you know, this government isn't sort of totally inured to that argument. They disestablished the Families Commission in their first year, full year in government, as they should have. There are a lot of worthy sounding things in government that you can cut without anyone being worse off. But look, yeah, Neil's right, you're right. National will need a more coherent story of the things that they want to cut. And, you know, otherwise they do risk a Jacinda Ardern show me the money moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting you bring that up. I can still see Key doing it now to Gough. And it was,
That's right. And they need that story. Where I think the government has given them a bit of an opening is on the emissions reduction plan. You know, there's lots of plans for plans. And there the argument is, you know, the government will be able to do the same thing and say, oh, but look, this money that we've allocated to reducing emissions through a policy to do whatever, you know, that sounds great. You can't cut that. And then it's up to National to actually make the case that no work's been done, or the work is frivolous, or something like that, you know. And they need to get better at arguing that. But I don't doubt that they will have those arguments in place by next year.
Well, let's finish on that question of the emissions reduction plan, because that came out just after our time last week. And again, it's interesting in the mix, isn't it? And it's for all political parties to discern more the tolerance of different demographics and the intolerance of different demographics for a climate plan. And especially when it comes up hard against cost of living issues that are going to be top of mind for quite a while. So each of your take, please, on the plan as it was released last week and how it's been received and how it needs to be sold and or debated. Neil?
Yeah, look, I think actually the ERP was handled pretty smartly. The government's political antenna seems to have been turned back on in recent times. And if you look at, you know, what it could have been at a time when there's heightened concern about the cost of living, a big, you know, multi-billion dollar, multi-year plan to tackle climate change could have played quite badly. I think part of what worked was there was sort of a carrot rather than stick approach. So they avoided some of those lightning rod issues like banning used gas connections or importing new petrol vehicles. And I think the opposition would have been disappointed there weren't more sort of bans and levies and taxes for them to target. So, look, I mean, the proof will be in the doing. As I sort of said before, if everyone can set targets, targets don't actually reduce any emissions. You know, the New Zealand's been setting targets for decades now. What matters is the plan to get there. And I think, you know, while there has been some criticism that some of the plans in the ERP have been to do more work, that's kind of the nature of a plan that stretches out over the next 30 years and that will totally transform our economy. But there are really good concrete measures in there. Again, I think it was good that National agreed to the targets, but they do actually need to come up with a plan at some point. I think sort of there was a lot of empty rhetoric, this sort of bizarre attack on corporate welfare in terms of government working with industry, which is a very cost-effective way to reduce emissions and avoid the carbon price getting to, I think, Concept Consultant did a report last year saying that it would have to rise to $575 per unit in order to do the work entirely by itself, which would mean extra prices at the pump. So I think National's position has to be fleshed out a bit, and it's not good enough just to sort of complain and say, well, we don't like how you're doing it.
Ben?
Yeah, look, I think National's position does have to be fleshed out a bit on this. I think Labor's position needs to be fleshed out on it as well. There is a lot of planning for plans, a lot of these things that sound like concrete policies, you know, to reduce emissions, remains unfortunately moonshots. $170 million to reduce agricultural emissions by, about 3 or 4 times as much as they estimate reducing industrial process emissions. Now, that's great, but that depends on you actually, you know, inventing the innovations, coming up with the new technology. So we still are in this, you know, position of sort of, you know, wait and hope, and hopefully moving on to a bit more sort of active doing and hoping. But, you know, look, we can't say that it's as simple as there is a concrete plan that will reduce emissions this much on one side and there's no plan on the other side.
Well, there isn't though, right?
Well, I don't think there's a concrete plan on either side. Right now we have more of an outline of what Labor intends to do. I mean, look, you know, think about the detail. There's still not even any detail on the cash for clunkers scheme, which is what, $600 million. You know, I mean, we still haven't seen how they will actually close the gap for a low-income family between New Zealand's most popular car, the Nissan Tita, which rolls off the boat for about $5,000 or $6,000, and a second-hand Nissan Leaf. And if they do close that gap, you know, is it kind of like dream house renovations where they then have to subsidise the insurance for it as well?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think I agree that there is a lot more work to do to flesh out the emissions reduction plan. It'll be ongoing for years. I guess my point is we do actually have a proper debate in this country, and both with the budget and the ERP, the pattern we're seeing is National saying, you know, oh, we think what you're doing is terrible, but we have absolutely zero plan of our own. And I just think the public is being denied an actual choice, an actual debate on the major issues facing our country, because one side just has absolutely zero content and nothing but criticism. And I do think we need to expect better of them.
Interesting stuff. I'm really interested to see, again, where the politics heads the next while. And there's no doubt these cost of living issues are very prominent at the moment. There's no question of that. But again, where do things go in the bigger picture over the next sort of 12 to 18 months? And how much does fatigue with incumbency come into it? These were all things out of the Australian election, again, that while there's not a straight parallel, no way is there a straight parallel, but it is really interesting and timely to consider mood shifts, demographic shifts, issue shifts, the whole lot. So there'll be plenty to chew over the next while. Thank you, as always, Neil Jones and Ben Thomas.